Oops. Okay. Is there a feedback still? It's too sensitive. Okay, that should be better. So I think you've had enough of semaphores and monitors and concurrency. If it seemed like an eternity, it was. There was a lot of material there. And yes, I used the past tense. We're going to move on. Okay, we'll move on to what seems to be more practical, but this is an operating systems course. It doesn't get easier. But concurrency is probably one of the harder topics because it's not intuitive, it's hard to see, it's a little program that is run at different speeds by different threads. Anyway, we're done with that. Then there is the next topic, major topic, is memory management. So everything we've covered so far, except introductory stuff, could be termed CPU management. Well, CPU management and was really scheduling, but concurrency is also part of CPU execution strategies. So it's everything to do with the CPU. So we have one other major section left, which is the memory. Now, what's there to manage in memory? There is. As programmers, what we see about computer memory is it's kind of magic. We don't have to worry about it. That is, there's something called addresses and stuff, but we don't use that. We use variables that get somehow miraculously attached to addresses. We do use, as a programmer, you do use the stack, but even that's kind of hidden. You don't explicitly use any stack. You're just told to be aware that these local variables come and go because of something called the stack. And then, a little more explicitly, you use the heap, which is really the memory allocation, malloc or new, then you're supposed to dispose it, unless if you're using a more higher-level language which does automatic garbage collection and things like that. But you need more and more memory to run your program. You're supposed to reuse it, but that's another story. And this memory just appears when you ask for it, and then you don't know. So how is this actually managed? Well, I will spend a little bit of time, I'll try to be brief, about physical memory systems. This is how computers were built. Memory is a physical thing, it's RAM. And you've got to get addresses in RAM and play with them, even though you have multiple processes running. Physical memory systems are a pain in terms of managing memory. And pretty much we've done away with it, except for very low-end microprocessors, controllers, and things like that. So anything that we CS people use today that's a computer with an operating system, we do not use physical memory systems. We go to virtual memory systems. And virtual memory is a method that is implemented in hardware. The operating system manages it, but it adds another layer of abstraction and complexity to how is the memory actually structured. So before we talk about these virtual memory systems, let's take a look at a physical memory system, even though that's obsolete. So in a physical memory system, memory is a set of addresses starting at 0 going up to some large number n. And some people draw 0 at the bottom, I draw 0 at the top, but both conventions are okay. It's a linear sequence of bytes or words. So memory location 0 is a memory location in RAM. The memory location 1 is the next memory location. How far away is 1 from 0? By convention, it is either one word away or one byte away. That is, each slot has a size of a byte or a word. Word addressable used to be more common. Today, it's pretty much byte addressable. Bytes are much smaller than words. They're 8 bits. And words don't have a meaning anymore. It could be 16-bit, that's earlier, 32-bit, reasonably common, going out of fashion. 64-bit is the more commonly used word size today. Maybe someday it'll be higher, but we're kind of stuck with 64 bits for a while. So since word is not very well defined, people, hardware designers, choose to go with bytes and then finagle the words out of it. While discussing memory management, it is much simpler for me to discuss it in terms of word addressable memory than byte addressable memory. The reason being, we are humans, we are not electronic circuits. It's easier for us to see larger quantities, slicing them, because we'll get into a lot of virtual. So I will kind of stick to word-oriented. It's easier to explain, easier to understand. But systems are implemented byte-oriented. Just a caveat there. So I've got a bunch of words in memory, going from the word number 0 to word number n minus 1, essentially. So n words in memory, or n bytes, if it's a byte addressable. I want to run an operating system and a bunch of processes in this memory. How do I do it? Well, it seems to be simple. What you do is you decide that the operating system sits here, from 0 to whatever the size of the operating system is. Then process P1 will be here, process P2 will be there, process P3 will be there. But if you think about it, this cannot work really. Do you a priori know what the size of process P1 is and what its internal structure is? Actually, you know what its internal structure is by looking at the code. We'll talk about it in a minute. But we don't really know because there's all these dynamic memory allocation going on. So you kind of guess P1 is so much and reserve that memory, then P2, then P3. But then P2 terminates. And it leaves a hole there. And then you get P4 and it's not fitting. So you might have to find a smaller one that fits there. But then you're in an out of memory situation. But I've oversimplified it. You'll essentially have 20 to 100 processes running in various slots in memory. Some are starting up, some are dying, some are over. And there's all these little pieces of memory floating around. How do you manage this whole thing? And that becomes the memory management problem in physical memory, which is not, there are no clean solutions to most of the problems in physical memory. So what do I mean by that? So I said we have P1, and inside this P1 I have code which is static, data, which is static, by the way, heap, which is dynamic, and stack, which is dynamic. And more so why did I call code and data static?
Because
their size does not change, correct. Are you sure the size of the data does not change?
Yeah. Pretty much.
Mm-hmm. why is he saying the size of the data doesn't change? How would it change? What is data? I mean, think of a program. Where's the data in that program? Yeah, but you wrote that program. Where did you? How did you express that this is data? I can't hear you. Functions. Functions are not data. Input to the functions are arguments. Yeah. High, low, what?
Transistors in memory, high, low.
That is how all memory is implemented, be it code, data, heap, or stack. I'm talking about the part that we call data as a programmer.
Variables?
The variables. What kind of variables? Are there different static variables? Where do these static variables are part of the global? You could label certain things static, but if you don't label them, then what kind of data is it? It's local data if it's in a function, and it's global data if it's outside the main program. That is the data. Although all of this is data, when we talk about data as a segment, it is only that part which is global, static. And hence, I'm calling it static, because once you compile a program, there is nothing that you can say that will increase your global data storage. So you're not possible to do that. So it's fixed. But if you want more global data, you have to use the heap. Okay, so given that we have four things in a program, I can put the static code. Let me redraw this. I know the size of the code, I know the size of the data. I put them there. I've somehow figured out that I'll put P1 here. Now, what do I do with these two? And in fact, the strangeness of this is the heap is a piece of memory which grows downwards. The stack is a piece of memory which... This is the stack, it grows upwards. This is the heap, it grows downwards. As in lower, higher addresses, heap grows towards higher addresses, stack grows towards lower addresses. Where do we put these? Do we allocate something completely somewhere else? Or do we put it in here? And if you think about it, there's no good answer to this. So we just have to make up something. And this made up something is put the heap here, put the stack here. And this guy can grow, that guy can grow, but only P1 can use this space. How do we know how much it'll grow? How do we? Maybe the programmer knows, but at this point the programmer is not controlling anything. This is the operating system's job. How does the operating system know? It doesn't. So it makes an arbitrary decision of putting a bunch of empty space out there, and all this empty space is allocated, but the program won't use it. And if it uses it up, I cannot reallocate. I cannot say, okay, I'm going to move the stack down. Even if there's space here, I cannot move the stack down and make space there. Why? Long, complicated story about reassigning addresses. You have pointers to those areas, and the pointers are in global data, and the operating system doesn't know where your pointers are and what you're doing in your program. It cannot arbitrarily move your data around. It can before the program starts, and then it can load up the base register or do dynamic relocation, and there are various techniques for that. But once the program starts, you cannot mess with it. You cannot move it to a different area. You cannot try to separate the stack and the space more. Or you cannot bring them closer. You're stuck. So there is a bunch of arbitrary decisions that need to be made. There is allocated storage. We tell programmers, look, this stack and heap automatically grow. You're using only the memory that you ask for. That's not true. It's all pre-allocated. Because we just assume you're going to ask for so much memory, we pre-allocate it. So you are given these tools which make it appear to programmers that you're being frugal with memory, except that's all smoke and mirrors. Both in physical memory systems and to an extent in virtual memory systems. There's a lot of pre-allocation going on. Yeah. Through things like new or malloc.
I mean, like at the time of process creation.
Have you seen that? Because it's not implemented that way. Because if I told you, you will have to tell the operating system how much memory you want when you run the process. Like, what does that mean? How do I know how much memory do I want? Let me guess. I will get as much as I can. Make it 10,000. 10,000 what? Whatever. So that doesn't work because we humans have no concept of what memory does this program use. So it's these abstractions that want to hide the details. And that gets thrown to the operating system saying make arbitrary decisions. So so the first thing is internal to the program, you have problems. You have problems in the sense that the operating system has to make arbitrary decisions on how large of a memory should be allocated. And these arbitrary decisions do take into account how big your actual code size is, because the OS knows that, how big your actual static variable size is, the OS knows that, and maybe uses a formula to allocate some more to it. That means the program, the total memory allocated to a program or a process is variable, depending upon how big the static part of the process is and how much additional memory the OS chose to give it. This additional memory, in many cases, will be wasted, and in lesser cases, will be not enough. So if it's not enough, then the program will terminate. If you rerun it, it'll terminate again. That's a mess. So yes, there are, in very old systems, there used to be an option which says, try and give me more memory than you think you should, which, again, could be abused. So it's just not a good way of doing things. So this thing, pre-allocate, we say this pre-allocate, that is wasted memory, that allocated memory that is wasted is for some reason called internal fragmentation. I'll come and explain that later. It doesn't make sense now. But the term used for memory that is given to somebody knowing that probably won't be used, that's internal fragmentation. So we have quite a bit of internal fragmentation in physical memory systems. Secondly, now this is, I'm looking at the point of view of one process. You have hundreds of processes or 50s of processes. So what happens when you have multiple processes? As the system starts up, I can nicely stack each of them one by one and fill up my memory with all these processes. But that would be nice if one by one these processes are starting up. But within a few minutes, hours, the scenario landscape changes. Processes terminate and new processes start up. So as processes are terminating, terminating processes cause a hole. So there are two kinds of memory in physical memory systems: allocated memory and hole. Unallocated memory is called a hole. So very soon you will have a bunch of allocated memory and a bunch of holes, all of different sizes. And then you want to run a program and you've got a bunch of holes out there. You've got a new process. Which hole do you put it in? The largest one, the smallest one? The smallest one might be too small. Okay? Again, it turns out, people have studied this problem, done a lot of simulations. It turns out that there is no proper answer to this. There are two strategies, best fit and worst fit. Best fit says choose the largest hole. Worst fit says choose the smallest hole larger than the size that you want. Both work equally good or equally poor, which is the completely diametrically opposite. One should be better than the other. It's not. And in the end, result is you get lots of holes that are too small. And so if you've got lots of holes that are too small to run most programs, this situation is called fragmentation. Now the word fragmentation makes sense. I've got allocated pieces scattered all over in fragments, and they are different things. And then once you have fragmentation, this type of fragmentation, okay. both external fragmentation and, okay, fragmentation is kind of wastage of memory. If it's external fragmentation, that is these little holes that are not very useful, unless if you've got a tiny process to run it. But any a bunch of stuff sitting there is fragmented. Or you have internal holes, which is things allocated to processes that they are not using. In both cases, this is wastage, but you may have internal and external, two quite different ways of wasting memory. And the word fragmentation is used to describe both. Will you have fragmentation in physical memory systems? Yes. How do you fix? And we're talking about an age when memory and CPUs both were very expensive. You don't want to waste these things. So how do you use fragmented memory? Nobody could... Well, there's been all kinds of band-aid kind of solutions to this. Nothing good, clean, and useful. So quickly going over band-aid solutions. Compaction sounds like a great idea. So you've got fragmented external fragmentation. Why don't we just squeeze them all together? And now we have a lot of space at the bottom. Compaction, depending on factors, may be impossible, or I can find a way of doing it which will make it run slow. Impossible. Sometimes this thing gives me trouble. Without going into CPU architecture, some CPUs use absolute addressing. That is, load store instructions use an address. If you're using absolute addresses, then you can't move data around. The addresses are hard-coded in the program. Or there are pointers in the data. The pointers are pointing to an absolute address. You can't move that data around. So compaction is not possible. Everything is locked down in memory. That means you can't do it, but then people started moving into this indirect addressing or relative addressing. Everything goes through a base pointer as well as maybe another indirect pointer with relative addresses on stack, etc. That makes compaction possible, but that puts a memory translation overhead on every access. It runs slower. And the second problem with compaction is you've got to completely freeze the system, sweep the memory. It takes quite a long time. It freezes up. Sweeping so many megabytes or gigabytes of memory takes quite a while. You're a matter of seconds, if not minutes. And we're no longer in the millisecond arena. Okay? So compaction is not a great idea, but you have to do what you have to do if you're using a physical memory system. And then there is swapping. That is, you move things in and out of memory to disk. Now, strange thing about swapping is the terminology which has stuck today. I'm sure all of you have seen or heard about the swap file. If you go into Windows, if you go into Linux, there is a swap partition or a swap file. That is not swapping. It's unfortunate. That's a demand paging store. Swapping means completely moving programs to disk. So it's similar. It's called a swap file, but swapping is a physical memory concept that's no longer used. Windows doesn't have swapping. Linux doesn't have swapping, but they all call their backup store a swap file or a swap partition. Okay? So not to confuse the present usage of the word swapping and this swapping. Swapping is moving entire processes to disk to free up this memory and then bringing that process back to the same location. If you're using absolute addresses, if you're not using absolute addresses, you can bring it to another location and in the meantime do some compaction while you're doing compaction swapping. So that's a long story. It's like, why do we need to go there? We don't use such systems anymore. So I won't go there. Okay? So there's a bunch of solutions that were proposed and used until maybe even 20 years ago. There were lots of systems using swapping and physical memory systems. Today, the only physical memory systems are preloaded systems, not general purpose systems. You load up like your car computer or whatever, the fixed set of programs are loaded, it stays there in memory, it runs. That way we don't have to use memory management. So anything with to do with memory management has moved on to virtual memory. Because the problems here are a little too much. I cannot handle lots of dynamic processes of varying sizes coming and going whenever they feel like on a chunk of memory which has addresses and everything has to be contiguous. So maybe I forgot to say that. How do you spell contiguous? No, that's not right.
C-O-N-T-I-G-U-O-U-S.
G-U-O-U-S? Oh, maybe that. Okay. What does that mean? That means if I have global data, if I have code, so this is a program with some functions, this is a bunch of opcodes here. Can I take this and separate it into two parts and put one chunk here, one chunk there? No. Why not? I've got a piece of code that I want to put in memory. Do I have to put it all together or can I put it in two different places? I as an operating system. Answer is, I have to put it together. How? Why? Because the program counter goes one step at a time. If you put a gap in there, it'll step over something else. And that's true for data, because you've got arrays and structs in there. That's true for stacks, because it's going push and pop operations. That's true for heaps, because each heap segment is a struct or an array or a malloc which allocates contiguous things. So all of these have to be contiguous. And that creates more problems that I cannot put things wherever I have space. I have to put them in blocks. The blocks are of different sizes. Now I've got a mess. Okay. So we had to live with this, but thankfully we don't. Any questions about this? Okay. So, We'll start with simple paging systems. This is the theoretical paging system. I'll tell you what it is. Paging systems disassociate. Oh, I first said paging systems and virtual memory systems. Paging systems mean paging systems are systems that separate out logical and physical addresses. That is, the machine runs two kinds of addresses at the same time. The RAM still sees physical addresses. That's that old physical memory system. On the memory side, it's a physical old type of memory system. On the CPU side, the CPU is told there's no such thing as RAM. There's something called this magic logical address, that's what you will use. And in the middle is a mostly hardware-based memory manager that translates between these two addresses. And that creates a much more efficient way of handling memory, but there's a price, it's slower. Slower doesn't matter that much anymore. It's more expensive, you've got to put in a lot more hardware, it's slower. None of these two things bother anybody anymore. Okay, fine, we'll just up the clock rate, we'll build nicer hardware, we'll be done. Because software-wise, it's easier to use. Virtual memory systems are a slightly different beast, theoretically, but I'll come to up my terminology here, but that's okay. Virtual memory means the operating system lies to the applications. That they tell you you have lots of memory, even though I don't have lots of memory, I've got a fixed size RAM. So there's a bit of smoke and mirrors for applications. That is, memory is unlimited. That's in virtual memory systems. Paging systems are the little smoke and mirrors on the CPU, which is not allowed to use RAM memory addressing. RAM uses RAM memory addressing, CPU uses logical memory addressing. What's the difference between these two? Well, when they were invented, people said they're two different orthogonal ideas. You can have virtual memory without paging, you can have paging without virtual memory, blah, blah. It has boiled down to be the same thing today. All systems are virtual memory, paging systems, so these two words are interchangeable. Okay. But there is technically in the implementation some differences which we look at, but the way we talk about these things, it's all virtual memory systems. Fine? So the complexity lies, how is this memory translation done in hardware combined with the operating system to make the processes think of memory in a different way than the processes in physical memory systems. So we'll start with paging. In a paging system, Process memory always starts at memory location zero. All processes. Of course, that can be true for physical memory systems because they've got to go to different places in physical memory. But here, we are decoupling the notion of where it goes to what you think is the address. So all processes start at memory location zero. And that's your logical address. It's a contiguous set till logical address X, which is the limit of the process. And in this, the code data stack heap are packed in here. In a real world, I mentioned the VAX. Just jumping ahead a little, this is a simplistic paging system. In reality, there are many different kinds where a process occupies very fragmented kind of memory areas and has certain rules and all that. The nicest one was used in an old machine called VAX, completely obsolete but beautifully well-designed machine by digital equipment, obsolete company called DEC. And that design has stuck. Today's Intel machines use the VAX architecture. So that's why I bring up the VAX. It's a dead thing, but the VAX architecture, although nobody acknowledges it, it is the VAX architecture being reused in almost everything that we see today. Okay? So it's kind of a... we'll talk about VAX architecture later. Now we'll keep it simple. We have one fixed-sized allocation of addresses to every process, and it's the same range for all processes, 0 through X. The operating system decides how big is X. It could change per process, but often doesn't need to. Let's go with this fixed size. And then what the memory management system in hardware will do is break this process up, process memory up, into fixed sized chunks called pages. Okay, so the old VAX architecture said 512 byte pages. Intel today uses 4 meg pages. So a page size for an Intel machine is 4 megabyte. So regardless of how big or how laid out your process is laid out, it'll be broken up into 4 megabyte pieces pretty arbitrarily. And then each chunk will be thrown into RAM at any arbitrary point. Does not have to be contiguous. Here in logical address, this is contiguous. In RAM, this guy may be here, this guy may be there, this guy may be there. And the RAM is not contiguous. So our whole problem with physical memory systems was we were tied to these RAM addresses and everything had to be contiguous. Paging systems get rid of it. They break processes down into completely arbitrary chunks, not arbitrary chunks, arbitrarily cut chunks, but very uniform sizes. There's only one size, which is the page size. Choose your favorite, 512 or 4 megabyte, whatever it is, doesn't matter. And each page will fit into each chunk in memory, and the memory chunks are called frames. So every page fits into every frame, and you don't have to have any kind of organization. This can be a jumble, as long as you can put all the frames in there. And then we need to talk about some hardware that will keep track of this whole thing. So as a programmer, even if you look at memory addresses, you'll always find they're the same. Every time you run a process, you'll get the same set of memory addresses. They typically start from zero. Actually, the first few are reserved, so you'll start from something like 128 meg or something, but it's the same thing, and then you go up much, much, much higher from there. And that's true for all programs, be it Hello World or be it a complicated web browser. And these addresses are the addresses used by the CPU. So all load store instructions, every instruction in the CPU uses these addresses. These addresses are meaningless to memory. The memory uses the physical addresses, and there's a translator in the middle, which is constantly doing this. Okay, any questions? You see the resolution of the fragmentation problem and the compaction problem and all that. So as long as you have frames in memory, you can load a process. If you're out of frames, you cannot. But then your processes are pretty used up. So so we say paging systems have no external fragmentation. Why? There's no holes in memory. In RAM, each hole is a frame. If you can use it, you can use the frame. So it's not variable size slivers and things left over. Every frame of memory is available for allocation to somebody who wants it. There is minimal, I disagree with this, but I'll go with the textbook saying there's minimal internal fragmentation, half a page per process. Because your process size, maybe there's a certain size to it, but it has to be pushed into an integral number of pages. So the last page may not be totally full. And on the average, half the page will be wasted. So internal fragmentation, that is allocated memory that's not being used, is half a page per process, which is trivial. I said I disagree with it, is because if you're going to put a process in a bunch of pages, how big is that process? How did you decide? How much pre-allocation did you do for stack and heap? That's also wasted space. We're not accounting for that. We just say that's what the process needs. So there's a little thing there about, do we say that that's useful allocated memory or it's wasted memory? I claim it's wasted memory. So that's why the VAX architecture even gets rid of that wasted memory. But for now, we are going to say that a process is a contiguous chunk, one contiguous chunk that is divided into pages. These pages are put into frames, and somehow we wave the magic wand and it all works. Okay, to make it work, what do we do? Let's do an example here. Let's say in the logical memory, the process uses 3 pages. What are the addresses in the process? Well, the addresses are of a much finer grain. We'll have to talk about page sizes, which I won't right now. The first page is page number 0. It has a certain number of words or bytes in there. Each one of those are addressable. The second page is page number 1. The third page is page number 2. These cannot be decomposed and pushed into different. This whole page has to go into one whole frame. So let's say the operating system decides to allocate 3 pages to this process and then takes the contents of these 3 pages from disk and puts it in 3 different pages of memory, 3 different frames of memory. And it puts page number 0 here, puts page number 1 here, and puts page number 2 there. Okay, it's allowed to do that. Or maybe we make it a little more complex. We know page number 1, page number 0, reverse order. It doesn't matter which order, where, how random we put it. And since we did this, we have to keep track of where things went. So in the page table, there'll be 3 entries. These 3 entries will be 4, 3, and 0. Where did I get those numbers?
The frame numbers.
So I didn't write 4 here. Page 0 is in frame number 4. 1 is in 3. Notice I do not store the page number. I only store the frame number. Because the page number is implied as the index to this page table array. You know, when you use arrays in programming, the array indices are never stored. It's only the array contents that are stored. So the indices are 0, 1, and 2. That's what the operating system does. And then you start running the program, something else happens. Somebody has to figure out any addresses generated here somehow has to be transformed into an address here. Can that be done by the operating system? The answer is it's easy, it's just a little arithmetic. But it cannot be done by the operating system. Why? How often do you have to do that translation? That is, the CPU accesses something in page number 0. 0 needs to be changed to 4. No? On every memory access. And memory accesses happen on every clock cycle, maybe multiple times each clock, or every clock cycle to keep it simple. And you cannot use software to do this because then you have to run that software. It'll take hundreds of clock cycles per clock cycle. The machine will slow down tremendously. So there needs to be some underlying hardware taking care of this. So now let's look at that part. How do we do address translation? So, The CPU generates logical addresses, it goes into MMU, out comes a physical address, and that's called translation or address translation. To talk about that, we need to say, okay, what's the paper and pencil method of doing this? So let's say we have to define an architecture. This is a word addressable machine, and there's 100 words per page, and it's all decimal oriented, not binary, because we are human beings, we like decimals. If it actually, the machines are all byte addressable, and the arithmetic is done on binary, so you don't use 100 words. You can use 512 words, you can use 1024 words, you can use 2048 words, that sort of thing. But the reason why it's powers of 2, and I would prefer to do this thing in powers of 10, is because of the way arithmetic happens, division and all that. And this is how we'll do this. Where were we? This was 4, this was 3, this was 1? Yeah, I think so. Let's say the logical address, no, that will be too much. What's the addressing? This address is 0. What's the last address in the page? What will be the last, so this is the set of words in this page. What's the last address on page 0? The first address is 0. First address of the page is 0. There are many words in the page. What's the last address in the page?
100.
No. Close.
99.
What's the first address in the next page? 100. Then it'll go to 199. Then it'll be 200. To 299, right? So if I generate an address, for whatever reason, this one wants 125. The address generated by the CPU is 125. Which page is it on? One. Why? Because you use, I said 100 words per page, you use decimal chopping off, this is the page number, and this is the offset. So 125 means the 25th word on page 1. Even though that's an address, I can say it's page 1, 25th. And page 1 is in memory location 3. What will be the physical address? The I want to fetch from 125. Page 1, 25th location. Okay. Translate that to the physical address for RAM. This one you can guess. 325. Why 325? Because page 1 is in page 3, 25 down from there, 325. So, all we have to do at the MMU is look up page table get frame number and put it here and copy offset. So that's my algorithm to translate from physical to from logical to physical memory. Separate it out into page number offset. Now, can you really chop a number like this? If the page, you can chop a decimal number like this if the page is a multiple of 10. You can chop a binary number like this if the page size is a multiple of 2. So this is easier for us to do. The computer does it in binary. So number of bits become important. If the page size is 1024, there will be 10 bits in the offset and rest in the page number field. Here the page size is 100, so there are 2 decimal digits in the offset and the rest is the page number. So you divide the address into two parts, page number and offset. Take the page number part, look at the index into my page table array, it'll give me a frame number. Replace the page number with the frame number, copy the offset to that, and that becomes the physical memory. That's all there is to it. And this can be done by hardware in less than a cycle. Okay? So, the assumption, which is a bad assumption, is this page table exists inside the MMU. So anytime an incoming logical address comes in, it looks up the page table and replaces the page number with the frame number, throws it out. And that's easy. Bad assumption, but we'll go with that assumption for now. So I'm just going to rewrite what I just said. So now, the trick is that every process has a page table. So when a process is scheduled by the CPU scheduler to run, its page table is loaded into the MMU. The MMU, at this point, does not care who's doing what. It is running a process, it just does this page number, frame number swap. The pages of this process is scattered all over memory. The CPU is clueless about that. The memory doesn't know which process and it doesn't matter. It's getting a stream of hits on various entries in its random access memory and it's servicing those requests. And everything should work. If there's a context switch, you throw this page table out, put in a new page table for the next process, and that process will work fine. So these page tables have to be stored somewhere within the operating system and moved in and out of the MMU. right? So that's my basic framework of how this works. Now, having said how brilliant this scheme is, let's talk about why it kind of sucks. And I haven't even added virtual memory, which will make it worse. This, I can load the page table into the MMU on every context switch. Well, it depends upon the size of the page table. How big is the page table? How do we know? Can we calculate the size of a page table? Under an Intel architecture, running Linux or Windows, both are the same. How would we? We'll start with what is the page size. Okay, page size is 4 megabytes. Okay. What other data do we need to calculate? How many entries in a page table? Equal to the number of per process. It's a page table is per process. Number of entries in the page table will be the equal to the number of pages of number of pages of what that is allocated to that process, right? Okay. How many pages is allocated to the process? We have no clue. You look it up. If you're running Windows computer, what's the size of a process? No, wait. Is it 4 megabytes a page? Or 4 kilobytes? Oh, I made a huge mistake there. It's 4 kilobytes. Okay, what's the size of an average process? No idea? A largish process. If you look up memory usage of, say, something like Firefox, it's routinely 100 meg or something. How do I get there? I won't have Task Manager coming in so easily. It's showing only 160 megabytes, but normally it's a lot higher. So 160 megabytes. If that's what the process size is, and there's a lot of people in the 100 megabyte range, so size of the page table, 100 meg, what will be the size of the page table? 4K? So that's 100KK over 4K, so 25 kilo entries. And each entry is more than a byte. It's actually more than 32 bits, but we can say it's 4 bytes per thing, so 100K bytes for the page table. Could be more. 100 KB of memory has to move. That's too much for a context switch. And 100... Okay. So 100K, that's a lot of memory. That cannot be done. So we can say store the page table in memory and let the MMU go get it from memory. Okay, in that case, every time CPU says fetch me data, MMU says fetch me memory entry, page table entry. Memory, where in memory? We don't know right now. Memory serves up this page table entry. It does the translation, sends back the page, the next fetch, and then gets the data. Okay, great. That'll work. Except, if you notice, there are two fetches in one fetch. That's considered a killer. Memory is much slower than CPUs. So fetching things from memory takes time. As a result, all these pipelining and caching and all that goes on in systems. You cannot have two fetches per fetch. It's going to completely destroy performance. So we need some other strategy. Oh, okay, I won't go into the strategy, but I'll give you the word TLB. This is done. And that kind of mitigates the problem bit. But MMUs with the simple memory management scheme is there on every system. Actually, it's a much more complex memory management scheme, which we'll talk about later. Let's stick to the simple one now.
Yeah, I'm like, oh.